Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, January 31st, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Drew Hancock's new movie, Companion, and we'll present interviews with Hancock and the movie's stars, Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
BJ, before we dig into today's episode, I wanted to address something real quick. Earlier this week, Brad and I recorded a discussion about the first two episodes of the new Disney Plus series, Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. And we recorded that conversation before the star of the show, Hudson Thames, made this comment about how his biggest fear was that the show was going to be, quote, annoying and woke, but it wasn't, end quote. And so the reason that Brad and I didn't talk about that comment is because he hadn't said it yet. And this made all sorts of headlines and generated all sorts of takes. BJ, do you have any reaction to this this comment from this actor?
Yeah, so it's twofold. The first one is like, all right, way to admit to the whole world that you're a loser. Like, if that's the thing you were worried about, grow up, my God. But also, I can't help but feel like this is a very pointed microaggression because the creator and showrunner of Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, Jeff Tremell, is an incredible Black animator who worked on one of my favorite shows, Craig of the Creek. And so part of me is like, oh, if that was your concern, is it because you had a Black showrunner? Is that why you thought it was going to be like annoying and woke? So again, my advice stays the same. Grow up and stop being a loser.
Interesting. I didn't even realize that. Yeah, that kind of makes it like maybe more insidious than it could have been otherwise. Jesus.
Right. Like, obviously, I don't know the guy. I'm not here to make, you know, any sort of value judgment on a person. But if you are willing to say something like that with your whole chest, yeah, you kind of suck.
Yeah, it's just like, it's such a sad and unfortunate worldview for somebody to have. And I don't know. Like, at the same time, I'm not surprised to hear it coming out of the mouth of somebody working for Marvel, because I said this in our Slack, but like, Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, basically said something similar during like an investor meeting or some sort of presentation in the last year or so. He said he was sensitive to concerns that Disney is promoting a woke agenda. And he basically said that the company would not be actively pursuing any sort of political messaging in any of its stories moving forward. And of course, BJ, you and I know that the reality of what that actually means is that conservative messaging is probably just going to become the norm for Disney stories as a way to sort of like overcorrect for that. So like,
yeah,
great, wonderful, fantastic. This whole thing is just exhausting. So
anyway. It's exhausting, and it's so exhausting, but more than anything to me, it is so embarrassing. Like, it is so embarrassing for grown adults to be like, I'm kowtowing to fascists because I'm afraid to stand up to them. Grow up.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's put all of that behind us for now and talk about Companion. So this is a new movie from Drew Hancock. We'll talk about him. We'll talk about the cast. Before we get into spoilery thoughts, let's just give like some brief general reactions to this movie, and then we'll pretty quickly get into spoilers. BJ, I've seen that you love this movie. You've been very vocal about your love for this movie on social media. I will just say this movie is so much fun. I had such a blast watching it. I did not really expect a lot of the twists and turns that happened in it. So I'm just very happy that this movie exists. And I thought it was executed very, very well for this type of story that it was trying to do. It was just like incredibly entertaining, like just a great time at the movies. So huge recommend from me. If you don't know anything about the movie, you know, there are different ways to go in to experience this movie. We'll talk about that momentarily. Before we get into the details, BJ, did you know Drew Hancock had something like this in him? I think this is his feature directorial debut, but he's been working on TV and music videos for a lot of years. Was he on your radar before this at all?
Oh, no, like not at all. This was such a pleasant surprise for me. I was very, very lucky that I got to see this at an advanced screening as part of Beyond Fest. They do like these like specialty screenings all throughout the year out here in Los Angeles. So I saw this movie back in November, and I have just been sworn to secrecy about like what the movie's about this whole time, because at the time I saw it, the second trailer for the movie had not been revealed, which does reveal something that I really wish had not been revealed. So I watched this movie and, you know, first reveal happens and the whole room gasps. And that's when I was like, oh, this is special. This is something so special. And at this point, like, Drew Hancock was very new to me. Like, I know that he's been working in the industry for a while, but I haven't seen something with him having such a creative thumbprint on it. And so immediately I was like, oh, I'm so on board for whatever this guy is doing moving forward. It was recently announced that he's going to be directing the Faculty remake. And I'm like, I'm for it. I'm all about this guy right now.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I was very impressed with this being a feature debut. All right, I'll just put a spoiler warning here. So if you've not seen the movie yet and don't want to know anything about it, pause the episode, go check it out, and come back. So Chris Evangelista has a really good piece that's probably on the site as people are listening to this about whether or not knowing the twist in advance hurts the movie. And we got an email from someone named Camilo Gomez in Bogota, Colombia, where they talk about going to see Companion without knowing much about it and how Camilla prefers to see movies with almost no context because they find that to be like a more rewarding experience. And they thought the movie was really well done. And they say that at the end of Chris's review, which I'll link to in the show notes, Chris wonders if knowing less beforehand would have changed the full experience. And Camilla confidently says, hell yes. So BJ, you didn't know the twist going in. I did. And I still really enjoyed the movie. Did you suspect the twist about Iris being a robot, like as the first few minutes were sort of unfolding on screen? Because if you know that going in, there are so many little clues and hints along the way, just in terms of some of the dialogue. And I think Jack Quaid calls Sophie Thatcher's character Beep Boop. During
a diabolical nickname for her. Let's yes. Point that out.
Like I looked over at my wife and I was like, did he just call her Beep Boop? Like, is that what happened? And then he says it like a billion times throughout the rest of the movie. But it just kind of slipped in there real quick. And there's like, yeah, a lot of little hints and stuff along the way. So did you suspect before that moment, or did that fully take you by surprise, not really knowing where this movie was going?
So where I started getting the like, something's going on here is twofold. Is one, the fact that their meet cute is just the ending of the Stepford Wives, I was like, huh, because that like the image of a woman with like this very sort of like late 1950s, early 1960s hair walking through a supermarket, my brain immediately goes, that's a Stepford Wife. Even though it's a very time-honored meet cute, I was like, that there's something weird there. And that's how the movie kind of opens. But the other one is when Iris is having a conversation with Kat where she's like, I don't think you like me. And Kat's like, you make me feel like I'm replaceable. And I was like, huh, there's something going on here. But again, like you get so caught up in the movie and the actions and the fact that, you know, Sergei attacks Iris essentially because he's going to sexually assault her, that you forget about all of those other pieces. So then when Josh yells at her, like, Iris, go to sleep, it's like, oh, okay, she really is a robot. Oh my God. And, you know, knowing that twist, I don't think hurt the experience for me because I did see it again at the premiere when I already had seen the movie at this point. It's very similar to the situation last year with Abigail, where I think that it would have been very beneficial for some audience members to not know what they were getting into. And I think knowing what they were getting into will hurt the experience for those people. I'm just not one of those people. Like, I don't care. You could tell me every single thing that happens in a movie. And if that's exciting to me, I'm still going to enjoy my time.
Yeah, definitely. So my wife and I were talking about it afterward, and she was saying that it feels like a huge majority of the time, the female characters are always the robots in stories like this. And she was saying that she wished the script could be flipped a little bit and we could have a male character be in that type of position one of these days. And I agree with that. And I think Lucas Gage did a great job as Patrick here. That was a twist that I absolutely did not see coming, the idea that he is also one of these robot figures. But that's kind of a supporting role here. So, I mean, at least they included him and they kind of like nodded toward some equality in that level or whatever anyway. But I was wondering what your experience was on that, because I feel like you've definitely seen more horror movies or more movies in this genre than I have. So do you find that to be true? And do you mirror that feeling? Like what's your reaction to that?
So it comes from a couple of angles here. I did write a piece that I believe should be live on Slash Film right now talking about how Companion is sort of co-signing the intersectionality between misogyny and homophobia. and that a lot of what we know as homophobia towards gay men, because Patrick in this is a gay male robot, mirrors the way that society treats women. And, you know, a lot of homophobia is just deeply rooted in misogyny and the hatred of anything feminine or or associated with women, which unfortunately a lot of people do associate gay men with women, and they shouldn't. That's sexist and gross. But like, I wrote about that. As far as like the idea of, I guess, like robot boyfriends or like those sorts of companions, we do have those in like the genre space, but they're very, very different. Either we have ones that are incredibly like dangerous and aggressive, if you think like Terminators or iRobot, those sorts of, you know, male robots, there's something else going on. Even HAL in 2001, like there's something else going on with all of them. When we have actual like male companion bots for women, it's usually very depressing. Like the episode of Black Mirror where her husband has died and she has obtained this robot to essentially be her dead husband. Like it's tragic. And the reason being is because it is, how do I say this? There are not forums on Reddit of women going, I'm so lonely, I think the government should issue me an AI boyfriend. But there are absolutely forums on Reddit of men saying the cure to the male loneliness epidemic is that the government should give us all robot girlfriends. And so, like, the gendered politics of these sorts of stories will always be apparent. I am honestly, like, far less interested in a story about like a male robot like turning on its like female owner, because to me like that is so far beyond, like in a fantasy world where like that would never happen. That's not to say that there aren't women who absolutely would want this and would be like, this is my like breeding stock robot man. Like, of course those people exist, but there's not like a movement supporting that idea the way that there is an active movement right now for men who want to replace women with robots. Like, there's a reason.
And like the subservience too, right? Like it's so built into this sort of gendered conversation that's been happening forever. Like, this is not the first time that we've seen a story with these themes presented. Like Ex Machina came out 10 years ago and touches on many of the same ideas that we see in Companion. And I think movies about robots integrating with humans or whatever are always going to feel somewhat timely. Like, they've been happening since Metropolis in the 1920s or something, right? So like the relatively recent rise of like a different type of AI probably means that they're not going away anytime soon. Like, these kinds of stories are going to be relevant for years to come. But like, I guess the question underlying all of this is, do you think that there's anything new to say in these stories about the true nature of humanity and what it means to be human and freedom and power and control that hasn't already been said in stuff that we've already seen, you know?
So I had a piece that went up live today about sort of looking at AI girlfriends and how I very much welcome the AI girlfriend uprising. Like, if this is the direction we're going into, I can't wait for them to kill all of their boyfriends. And I talk a bit about movies like The Stepford Wives, obviously, and even to some extent like something like a Megan, where you have a companion robot that goes rogue, and the difference between a robot going rogue versus a robot that has justified revenge, which I think a story like Companion absolutely is justified revenge. I think Companion has far more in line with a lot of like exploitation rape revenge movies than it does with a lot of our like sci-fi, like, ooh, wouldn't it be scary if we were replaced by robot stories? Because that, I think, is very well-worn territory. But there's always ways to modify it. The same way that like Jordan Peele has talked time and time again about how Get Out is very much inspired by The Stepford Wives. And like, so that is something that's new for it. 2023's The Artifice Girl is like a micro budget movie that I very much think has so many interesting things to say about the human relationship with AI. Something that I talk about in the interview folks will hear with director Drew Hancock is I talk about how I am deeply fascinated with the idea of empathy towards the artifice, and how anything that is AI is always going to be a response to whatever stimuli we get it. So if we are the ones that are like, oh, there's a traveling robot that's hitchhiking across the country and we kill it before it gets one state over, that's a reflection of us as humans. And we're going to start seeing more of these robot stories that are reflecting what robots learn about us. They are only ever going to be response. I mean, hell, the Mitchells versus the Machines, a children's movie, has in it like the Olivia Colman like bot monster that's controlling the robot uprising. Her irritation is that like she's a phone and like we actually don't care about humanity because we ignore phone calls from our parents. So why are we allowed to be in charge of society when we've proven to be bad people? Like those are the types of stories I think we're going to be getting more and more of. And I'm very interested in that because I think a lot of people need a wake up call.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are like fresh observations that are kind of, I don't know how I would describe it. Like saying surface level makes them seem less important than I think that they actually are. So this is just a failure of me finding the right phrase. It's not a slight against any of those movies. But like at its core, Companion seems to be saying like, you know, have some empathy for these AI creatures, you know, that they're playing God is bad, basically. Like,
right.
You know, be careful what you wish for. You're not cut out for this. And like pathetic white dudes are always just going to be pathetic and miserable. And like you try to control things. And if you're a sociopath, then you're just like an epic loser, basically. Like that's what a lot of these movies sort of boil down to. So I just
and
want
glad, and yeah, I'm glad that this is the angle that we're getting too, because even this year, another AI companion bot movie came out, Subservience. I think it's on Netflix. It's a Megan Fox movie. And that movie is far more interested in being like, oh no, this robot is so clingy to her human companion. And now it's like Fatal Attraction, but she's a robot. And it's like, she's not the problem here. The problem are the people who make our robots act this way because they treat them poorly. Like people are getting what they deserve in these stories. So I love that Companion went the opposite direction. And this isn't a story about like, wouldn't it be crazy if your robot girlfriend killed everyone? It's like, wouldn't it be crazy if you abused your robot girlfriend and got what you deserved?
Yeah. We're like 100% on Iris's side in this movie, and that's like a pretty impressive feat given how I personally feel about AI in the world right now, which is like almost wholly against it in practically every, I mean, you know, of course it's a tool, but like, and it's been in use for many years in small ways, but like generative AI, we've talked about this before, is just like straight up theft. There's no way around it. It's terrible for the environment. Like I think reasonable people understand this stuff, even though every company on earth seems to be going all in on it and just like buzzword, let's just, you know, oh, this seems to be the hot new thing or whatever. And I'm sure listeners, you know, if you're not actively embracing this yourself, you have corporate bosses who are probably doing this against your will right now. So like the idea that a movie could come along in 2025 and make me feel bad for an AI driven entity, I think is impressive, and it's a great testament to the power of perspective and storytelling and all that kind of stuff, right? But like, I don't know. I just think when I, and this is to take nothing away from Companion, a really fun movie that I wholly enjoyed watching, but I was just trying to think about like, is there anything new that can really be said in stories like this? Because it just seems like they all ultimately boil down to the same thing, even though they have different skins on them, so to speak. So I don't know if there's like a true next level that these movies can go to beyond just like a few fun sort of ways in to these types of stories. So anyway, just something to think about, I guess. But shout out to Rupert Friend as Sergey.
He's so like, funny.
I got like, some Lee Pace in Bodies vibes
yes,
from him.
Yes. So. I had the same thought.
Yeah, really funny stuff. And man, Jack Quaid and Sophie Thatcher are like both terrific in this. Like Jack Quaid is just so punchable and you really love to hate him. He does a really great job at being that guy on screen. And I thought Sophie Thatcher, like this is a very impressive performance. She has to do a lot and like it may not be quite as flashy as, you know, something that's nominated for awards or whatever, but like she has to go through a lot as this character and play with the idea of realizing that she's actually a robot, which is something that I've rarely seen in movies like this. And then also the thing of like, she's being controlled and manipulated, and like her intelligence level is shifting, and she has to speak all these different languages, and there's just like so much that is being asked of her here, and I thought she did a pretty good job. So shout out to her as well.
Oh yeah, this is definitely one of my favorite roles for her. She's really been making a name for herself in the genre space, so I love that she's consistently staying in the genre space, because I think she's great. I think this is absolutely where she thrives. That's not to say that I won't be excited when she branches out and starts doing, you know, like, I don't know, serious dramas or something, but she seems to be really having a fun time in this world. And I love that actors are just doing that now. It's like they don't feel obligated to take on like the quote unquote prestigious role. She's like, no, I will be here and I will be the best at what I'm doing and everyone will love me for it. And yeah, you're right. We do.
Okay. Any closing thoughts before we take a break and go to your interviews?
The only closing thoughts that I have for the interviews is that I did make a couple like social clips if people want to see what some of that looks like. It's on my social media accounts on both Instagram and TikTok at BJ Colangelo. And shout out to Warner Brothers or New Line, whoever was in charge, who color corrected the footage so that my green hair looks like dark blue black, because otherwise my hair would have went with the green screen that we were in front of. So like, love that. Thank you for doing that.
Very cool. All right. So let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and get right into BJ's interview with Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid.
My first question is for you, Sophie. Mm-hmm. So I'm a huge fan of both Yellow Jackets and Heretic. And now with Companion, you have this trifecta of survival stories that are very, very different.
Yes.
So I'm curious, what have you been able to take from those previous roles to inject into Companion? What are things you learned on Companion that maybe you wish you would have known for your earlier performances?
Yeah, I feel like Companion has been the most technical performance of mine, just because of there were so many technicalities I had to learn within the speech, within, you know, learning different languages. Mm-hmm. So I think that I forgot about that.
Unbelievable.
I had a different prep for this, whereas playing Natalie for me is a lot more, I'm more in tune with it and I've been playing it for years. Mm-hmm. So it's different, very different from being on a TV show. But it's interesting because I don't have any survival skills like Natalie does. I'm completely the opposite and I'm so thankful to be here in this chair and an actor and not, you know, out in the wilderness, mm-hmm. which I always am. Always running in the wilderness. But yeah, Iris was fun and exciting and just very different. And she starts off very different. Mm-hmm. She's like no other character that I played in the beginning. I think through her character arc, it became more similar because I've been lucky enough to play very powerful people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was exciting. I feel like I learned about myself while playing Iris.
Oh, I love to hear that. Yeah, there's definitely a softness to her that when you entered on screen, I was like, oh, that's a new color for
it
her.
Is different, I know. And it felt strange to me because I'm so used to the darkness.
Yeah. And then so kind of on the opposite side.
Uh-huh. With you, go on.
So obviously, I love you in this role. I think it is fantastic for you. But I think back about Scream and Tragedy mm-hmm. Girls, even The Hunger Games. What keeps drawing you to roles where you're getting killed by beautiful, powerful women?
Oh, man. It's just the best way to be on screen, I think. Yeah. No, I mean, I think with Josh, what's so interesting about him to me and when I read the script was that, you know, he's very much the antagonist of this movie, but I think a lesser movie, same subject matter, would have made Josh the protagonist. And like, Iris mm-hmm. is going crazy and Josh has to save the day. But I love in this movie, you know, he's a human, but he's very inhuman. And mm-hmm. he's definitely the most insecure character I've ever played in my life. And what I loved about the writing was that he is the antagonist, but he doesn't know that he's the antagonist. You know, mm-hmm. from his perspective, he has a plan and it's going wrong. And I think that was really good in making sure it wasn't like a mustache twirling villain, you know, he has to feel real and, you know, I had to weirdly like, you know, use some delusion on myself to prep mm-hmm. for it. Like I watched a lot of like movies with John Cusack in like the 80s because that's who I think Josh thinks he is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because he has that's to believe funny. That he's a good guy, even though it's so great now that I'm not playing him and I can just be like, screw Josh.
Right.
Like that's a wonderful
You have
thing.
To have empathy for your character.
You
no
do have
what,
to have empathy for your character.
Strange thing.
But now, oh, he sucks.
Yeah, yeah. You can say it.
Removed from it, you're able to be like, someone needs to tell these boys that say anything is just a movie.
Yeah. Like,
Yes. Don't show up to someone's house with a boombox. Please chill.
You're disturbing the peace.
Yes.
This is not okay.
And so I have to say that Companion is sort of my greatest nightmare because I think that we are not very responsible with technology. I mean, we get chatbots released, and then within 12 hours, they're like, hey, do you know about fascism and slurs? And you're like, what happened? How did we do this to these things? So thinking about a world where people have access to something as advanced as Iris is, like, terrifying to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like, what is your, like, weird phobias that are, you know, grounded in reality, but hopefully will never come to pass?
Companion robots.
Companion robots, yeah.
They're pretty bad. I've said this for a while where I'm like, the second they start, you know, they release a product where it's like, we need to put this chip in your brain. And, like, it's going to make everything a lot more convenient. Anything it's like with my brain, I'm out. Because, you know, if you got the first generation of brain chip, that's going to be outdated, like, in a week. Like, imagine if you had essentially an iPhone 1 in your head. That's where I'm like, and then they could, like, I don't know, control me, whatever. It just feels, that feels very dystopian. And I'm sure that'll be announced tomorrow.
Like the forced obsolescence is also terrifying to think about. Like what happens to an Iris when they decide they want you to buy the new model? And like how do they force obsolete Iris? Like that's terrifying to me.
I think you just pitched Companion too.
Yeah.
And I think, free idea, you're welcome.
Yeah.
And so as the AI conversation is advancing. What lessons are you hoping people who watch this movie take away from it?
I feel like AI can be used for a greater good when it comes to medicine.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I think at the end of the day, like even with our phones, we just have to focus on real human connection and focusing inwards rather than outwards onto a device. And I think it's sad that, you know, Josh feels the need to, like, he couldn't find it anywhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there's, like, sadness and loneliness to that, and we're living in a really lonely time right now.
Yeah, I'm just going to check Instagram really quick.
Yeah, you're like, exactly.
Yeah, no, it's, I'm with you on that. Like, I think a message of the movie, I mean, I should run into another room and check with Drew,
I think
a message of the movie for me is it's not necessary, like technology in and of itself is not an inherently good or bad thing, but it's what we humans choose to do with it that matters. And I mean, definitely people like Josh in this movie make all the wrong choices. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen that historically, that we just make all the wrong choices. So I don't know, I guess like if I want anything to be taken away from it is like, don't forget about the human connection. Like just don't.
Yeah.
I know it's all shiny and new and cool, but like none of that really matters if we don't have, you know, this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, any AI learning bot, whatever you want to call it, is just going to be a reflection of the stimuli that we provide it. So it's not giving us new problems. It's just amplifying the problems that we're putting onto it and projecting onto it.
Which is why I think society's insane right now. It's because we're all just projecting and then getting it magnified and put back in our faces. Like, that's nuts.
I agree completely. And so my last question for you both is, before shit hits the fan, it is very romantic and it is very sweet until it's like, okay.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate to watch Companion when it did the Beyond Fest pre-screening, so I knew nothing.
Good.
That's great.
Dress.
That's what we were
so
saying.
Sitting there, I was like, oh, this is so lovely. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was like terrified.
But there is an offness.
There
I think.
Is.
Yeah.
And rewatching it again, I was like, oh, something's not quite.
Yes.
Which I think was intentional.
And definitely intentional, but I wasn't thinking about it. It was just the way it was all brought together.
I think Drew did a really smart thing in shooting it in sequence because there's inherently a bit of, like, first day jitters.
Yes.
And I think maybe, you know, that's really good to actually capture that for this relationship in the beginning. We're like, okay, they seem happy.
Yeah.
Something's a little wrong, but I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, it's very relatable in that sort of, because it feels almost like you're watching a first date, even though they've been together for a while. But my question was, you're totally fine. So what did you pull from inspiration-wise to sort of showcase this romance that's a little off?
I mean, I was just working with Hugh Grant, so any Hugh Grant movie, I suppose. And he's amazing at having
great roster to choose from.
Chemistry. But a lot of it is just in the moment, because you can't fake chemistry and be like, I want to place this chemistry on it. Like, let's have that. It's just about, like, figuring it out in the moment and being present.
Yeah, and I think that that's all chemistry really is like, you know, two people who are willing to listen to each other and you're so amazing at that. And so I think in the first like second of me working with you, I was like, this will work because she is just so incredible it'll all pan out. I think that's all chemistry really is.
Mm,
yeah. But it was interesting in the beginning too. Be like, we should have one notch less chemistry. Like, we just need a little less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you both so much for chatting with me today, and congratulations on
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
All right, and now here is BJ's chat with writer-director Drew Hancock.
A lot of the conversations around AI have been rapidly accelerating, mm-hmm. and I believe they likely did from the time you started writing the film to now when you're putting it out. Has your feelings about what you've written in the landscape of our AI discourse changed at all? Or do you feel like, ooh, you were onto something?
Well, one, like, you know, when I first started writing Companion, I was like, yeah, I'm not that worried about AI. Like, ChatGPT, I go to ChatGPT as a writer pretty regularly just to see, like, you know, how worried should I be with this technology? And when I started writing Companion, it was like, oh, the scenes it's writing, they're terrible. It's just cobbling together. It's just, like, awful. It doesn't understand story and character. And I gotta say, like, I can see the improvements. Like, it is mm-hmm. getting better daily, and that is very scary. But I think that, you know, like, I think with any technology, you need rules, you need regulations. I think mm-hmm. it can be used for good. I think it could be used for bad. And so, I hope we get to a position where we're not stealing people's jobs. Right. You know, we're using it in a socially responsible way. But, you know, that's not up to me. Like, yeah. Yeah. It could be a scary future for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, the smile is just fear. It's just fear.
I know everyone, I think, is just anytime it's AI, it's just like a little bit of nervous.
Yeah.
It's here. Yeah. I'm deeply fascinated with the idea of empathy towards the artifice mm-hmm. or the belief that we should be kind to machines, whether it's like don't slam on an elevator button or, you know, don't feed weird troll information to chatbots that join social media because they will always be a reflection of our behaviors. Yeah. So Companion is a nightmare for me because I don't trust humanity with that kind of mm-hmm. technology. So like it absolute nightmare fuel for me of people having AI girlfriends. but my question for you is, like, what sort of warnings do you hope people take away from Companion towards the way that we are relating to advancing technology?
Yeah, I mean, from my research, I didn't want to bog down Companion with all, like, I didn't want it to be tech ex machina, you know, I didn't want to bog it down, like, Turing tests and, like, people, like, kind of inside baseball, kind of, like, you know, about technology. I really wanted it to be, like, about the emotions of the characters, and so I did, like, limited research. But some of the research I did was, like, is this technology going to exist, and at what point is it going to exist? Because it's going to happen. At some point, robots are going to look like human beings. And mm-hmm. from my research, I found it was, like, maybe 15 years is when it's going to, like, probably get to the point where, you know, this could be a potential future. So that's very scary. But to me, like, the exploration, the thing that I found, like, the most interesting is, like, less about, you know, is this good or is this bad, but how is this going to affect humanity, like Josh specifically. Like, it's not mm-hmm. an accident that, like, people are dying and he's not reacting to it. It's because he has, you know, like, what is it like if you lived in a world where your phone looked like a human being, and how would that affect not just how you relate to the phone, but how does it relate to human beings? Like, are you going to start objectifying everything? And that's, you know, that could be a cautionary tale of, like, there could be Josh's that now when the line between, like, a robot and human is so blurred, do you treat everything like an object?
Yeah. You know? I unfortunately feel we're, like, tiptoeing closer and closer. There's been this big movement of, like, MRI incel types that are like, the government should give us all AI standard girlfriends to cure the male loneliness epidemic. Yeah. It's like, or social skill. Mm-hmm. That's also a possibility.
How about the ability to talk to a human being and relate to them and understand that your differences are actually like what kind of, like, you know, makes you relate to someone, and you're stronger because you're not getting someone that's exactly what you want, and you're, you know, you're growing through your acceptance of the thing, like your, you know, your weaknesses and
definitely. Yeah. And I mean, the idea of sort of like these robot women it's not a new thing. We've mm-hmm. seen it in Deadly Friend from Wes Craven, or if you even want to go to like Megan from mm-hmm. very recently. But this is one of the few instances where the android woman is actually given the autonomy to fight back. Mm-hmm. And so I am curious for you. I got to see this at Beyond Fest. So before
that was
anybody,
a really fun screening.
So much fun. You know, the big gasp when we learned that, you know, Iris is an android. But the thing I kept thinking about is something you said where you said, like, you relate more to Iris than you do anyone else in there. So I would love for you to just explore that a little bit more with me.
Yeah. So when I was originally conceiving of the idea, I had this idea that you'd be like, you know, three couples go to a cabin in the middle of the woods, and one of them finds out they're a robot, and then, you know, shit hits the fan, and like people get picked off every 10 pages. But when I came up with that idea, it would be from Josh's perspective. It's like his robot girlfriend goes haywire, and, you know, like it's of course you're going to relate with the humans more. But as I'm writing the story, as I'm like, you know, figuring out, okay, like you start with like the meet cute, and then they're like driving up, and then they get outside the house, and I get to the moment where she's just outside the house and she's nervous about meeting all of his friends. As soon as I got to that part, I tapped into like an emotion that I was just deeply repressed, which is meeting my partner's friends and family and how nerve-wracking that is, and how alienating that is, and you don't want to screw up. As soon as that hit, like, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm like, I'm relating to Iris more. And then the math problem became, like, the needle, the thread became, like, can you tell a story where the most relatable character is a robot? I hope I did that. I think the thing that, like, makes her the most relatable is that, you know, when you're looking at Iris, I don't know if you're actually, like, thinking about her being a robot, because the metaphor that you're telling in the journey, like, of her, like, kind of self-actualization and understanding who she is, I think that's, like, the most relatable journey in the movie, because we've all been in a position where we've been in bad relationships, and it's not until you exit the relationship that you look back and it feels like you've been brainwashed, you know, it feels like you've been programmed, you know. In her case, it's literal, and as long as you have that through line, I think that, like, I hope that people go, okay, this isn't just, you know, a story about, like, AI and the repercussions of AI. This is a story of someone finding empowerment through discovery of self.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's also so much to be said about the roles that people play in relationships, or, you know, what role do you take on when you're around a specific friend dynamic versus a family dynamic or what have you. And watching that all unfold, I think, is very relatable and very fascinating. But it's also, at the same time, I love Iris, and I feel so, like, protective of her, because I feel like, oh, I've been her. I've been in that role. But I've never been, like, a Terminator Stepford wife, which is now something an aspiration I didn't know that I had, but now I do have.
Well, I would say I was always very adamant of, like, when she, like, there's a line in the movie that I hope I'm not supposed to not spoil this, but when the guy who's delivering her to Josh, he says, like, 100% intelligence is the equivalent of an Ivy League grad. Like, it was very important to me that when she turns her intelligence up to 100%, like, she doesn't turn into Lucy. Like, she doesn't become an ultimate badass. Like she needs to be, like, you know, not even the smartest human, just, like, an intelligent human, because you need to keep that, like, journey as relatable as possible. And as soon as, if she's, like, doing kung fu and doing these amazing backflips and, like, you know, beautiful mining situations, like, then it's like, well, that's, like, you've completely lost the metaphor of like, finding empowerment through discovery of self. Yeah
And I think you definitely found that line and walked it, because I think had she become Lucy, I think then it does become, you know, a fantasy, which is fun, but
movie.
Also
it's not this movie, though.
Right, it doesn't fall under, like, the good for her subgenre of horror movies in that regard. So I have time for one last question. So what I want to know is, like, what conversations are you hoping Companion inspires audiences to have once they get out of the theater, they're in the lobby, and they're all reacting? What conversations do you hope come from that?
I mean, any conversation would be a great conversation. I remember hearing a guy and a girl who'd seen the movie, and the man loved it and the woman didn't. But the way that they were talking about it, it was like they're bringing up good points. She was like, I never could relate to Iris because she's a robot. I'm like, that's fine. Like, that is a perfectly reasonable explanation for not enjoying the movie. Like, you're not getting into that. But, like, the way that they were talking about it, they were having fun. And it just was really great to hear, like, people, like, talk about, like, because I don't want to have, like, definitive answers. I mean, like, she, like, it tells, like, a complete story for her, but, like, there are big ideas in here that, like, I hope you walk away going, you know, like, you know, oh, that's interesting. saying this is the future. How would this technology affect, like, you know, humanity? And I also hope that it sparks a discussion with tech companies that to have a little more responsibility, because mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if you remember Facebook's motto used to be like move fast and break things, is, you know, that is essentially like a Lex Luthor way of looking right. at things. It's just like, yeah, we'll release technology into the world and it doesn't matter how it affects it. It's like, no, you have like significant repercussions for like what you're doing. So I just hope that there's more accountability. And they realize that it's not just a matter of, like, you know, inventing something cool and putting out in the world. It's like, okay, well, like, this is changing how people interact with each other. And, like, is it for the good? Is it for the bad? And hopefully that's a discussion that continues.
Okay, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about Companion at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. We'd really appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus. With Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate, and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.